In a moment, we're going to be talking about the fascinating life of Harry Houdini. We'll talk about predictions as well with Anthony Carr, the psychic, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Well, the world's most documented psychic, Anthony Carr, a modern-day Nostradamus, predicted 9/11, Operation Desert Storm, the killer tsunami of 2004, the discovery of the Titanic. How about the election of a German pope? Carr is an expert on the legendary escape artist, Harry Houdini. As a matter of fact, his father taught Houdini how to dive in deep water, a skill that the master magician would use over and over again for his underwater escapades and escapes as well. Anthony Carr is a musician. He's here, back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Anthony, good to have you back.
Mr. George Norrie, how are you?
I am fine, my friend. I'm looking forward to this. It's a perfect
time. Are you coming to town like Santa Claus this summer?
We do not know yet. There are some things in the work. I would love to get there. I've already told the people if we do, Carr gets on the show this year.
Well, I'd love it. I'd love it. Maybe I can... Bribe Tommy Danheiser, you know, with a box of chocolate.
He is beyond reproach, Anthony.
I better get the nails in the cross.
You got it. So what's new with you since we last chatted?
Well, I just curiously, has anybody ever, you must have grown up with that little kid's poem, Georgie Porgy?
Oh, yeah, they always sing that.
Well, I thought it'd be a perfect segue, if it's okay with you, to get this little commercial out of the way, which is where we're playing on the 21st of April, which is, 23rd of April, which is Georgie Porgy's, which is a beautiful nightclub, supper club here in Toronto. And all you Torontonians, and George, you have thousands of listeners here.
Yes, we do.
They make their way up, and we'll play all that old good old rock and roll. And I just keep hoping, and I hear through via the grapevine that you have an amazing voice. So I'd love to get you up on stage.
That would be fun. Now, who in the heck named his place Georgie Porgy?
Well, he's a Greek guy, Greek young man. It's a family business. Holds about 500 people. The souvlaki and all that is very, very good.
That's good size.
He's got two establishments here. People in Toronto know Victoria Park and Lawrence, and the other one is in Richmond Hill. And I said, how did you come up with these? Well, everybody saying, well, my name's George. Ever since I was a kid in school, they called me Georgie Porgy. It catches on. It's cute. Everybody seems to remember it.
Well, let's see what happens. Is it open yet, or it's going to open?
No, it's been open for a couple of years. We play there quite often.
Ah, okay.
Our two favorite places are that and the Black Bear Pub, which is, I told you, mentioned to you last time.
You mentioned that last time.
It's still, again, Victoria Park. And Eglinton, O'Connor Drive, and that's actually 2 days before Georgie Porgy's, which is the 23rd. And April the 21st, we're at the Black Bear Pub, where the food is excellent, small and intimate little jazz R&B blues.
All right, there you go. There's your free commercial, all right?
Is that it?
There you go. Now, how did your dad get to know Harry Houdini? How did that start?
Well, from what I understand, what he told me, and my mother told me and continues to tell me, was he started off with, here in Toronto, Conklin Shows, which is actually in the very spot where you come here to do your show, the Canadian National Exhibition Ground.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I think it's the Queen Elizabeth Building, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. That's the name of the theater.
See, I'm psychic. I know these things. Plus, I just drove by it. Anyway, he used to go back and forth to the States to work. What was that? Atlantic Pier,
which yeah,
the old pier, and also the one on Coney Island, which is I think the steeplechase pier. So apparently, and if you look on my website there. Under that Houdini stuff and on the YouTube, possibly on your website, is pictures of the diving team on the steel pier. I think it was later in the 40s and 30s with the sign on the marquee there. It's got Abbott and Costello and Sammy Kaye, Swing and Sway with Sammy Kaye, Harry James and all that. So he started going there and when he was about 18 or 19 and diving. And Houdini, or Eric, I think this time...
Eric Weiss.
So he was doing one of his stunts there. And anyway, one thing led to another. And my dad was a world champion high platform diver. And, he could... In fact, he learned to dive when he was in Naples as a kid.
Like the kind you see at the Olympics, right? He bounces off a springboard, that kind of diver?
No, he's a high platform diver. If you go, he'd go off a platform about 110 feet into about 6 or 7 feet of water.
Jeez.
And what's the secret? The secret is the minute you feel your toes or your fingers hit the water, you immediately have to come up, or else you'll kill yourself.
You smash, you hit the bottom.
I guess I've mentioned this a few times that. Houdini or Harry or Eric was also a very good high diver and swimmer himself, which very few people know. And he was getting ready to perform one of his trunks locked up and thrown in the water things there. And he had an incredible barrel chest, like a very wide chest, which was, I think I explained, how he could get out of those straitjackets.
Well, didn't he do that in the Detroit River, and they had to pull him up fast because something went wrong?
Apparently. Of course, the legend, the story is he kept hearing his mother's voice calling him, and that's how he found his way up through the surface of the ice.
And then he gets that sucker punch, and it kills him.
Oh, well, that was in Montreal. That was the...
No, it was in Detroit.
No. It was in Montreal at McGill University, and two of these students came.
But he died. He died in Detroit.
He died in Detroit, and the students, the two that came up to him, one of the guys was on the boxing team, and he was, he said, Mr. Houdini, we understand you can take a full punch in the solar plexus, but yeah. Well, before he got a chance to get turned around, the kid suckered him. And burst his appendix.
Oh, God.
So he didn't let on.
And Harry at that time had a broken ankle, so he really wasn't ready for anything.
That's right, exactly. So by the time he got to Detroit, he was starting to feel the pinch, as it were, from the pernicious anemia and so on. Well, then it burst, and of course, in those days, no penicillin and nothing to get
nothing.
So he died of peritonitis. And that, of course, was on
Halloween.
Halloween,
yeah.
which was October 29th, of course. But to get back to where my dad met him was he used to do these tricks with rings, which he didn't do that often, but because these are these card tricks which require close quarters and like an audience right up to you.
Well, was he a magician, Anthony, or an escape artist?
He was really an illusionist. But as an escape artist, and to him, advertising and publicity was everything.
Yeah.
And he had all of these rings, which were like, what do you call them? Not diamond rings, the rubies, red rubies, not real ones. So I have the ring that he gave to my father, because my father taught him some tricks about using his lungs for the highest capacity to build. And he had a much wider, I should say, thicker chest than did my father, and he could take in tons of air. And then you gotta remember, in those days, these guys, my dad and Houdini, I mean, they were worldwise, they were streetwise, and they took a shine to each other, just like my dad did with George Raft when they met here in Toronto.
Okay, all right.
And same thing, it was through a diving show and so on, and he both appeared on stage here because he was on tour with Scarface. At that time, with Paul Muni, George Raft was. So anyway, they hit it off, and he gave him one of these rings. When my dad died, he passed it on to me. And I do have half sisters and brothers in New York, and they also have some of the baubles and things.
Oh, that's cool.
So anyway, these guys, you have to remember the setting in which they. The function there with these guys were, had very little, no formal education basically, and they lived by their wits, and they were, street guys. They were both pretty tough, so they hit it off, and they kept. And each time that he came back, he used to say to my dad, you know, he says, hang on to this ring. It's my lucky ring. You keep it. Well, it must have been true because, less than 4 years later is when he died from that punch.
Yeah, he needed to have the ring on.
After he'd given my father the ring. And I don't know if you know this or not, but, you know, one of the really definitive books written about Houdini is, which is entitled the Quote Mystery, Spirit, Secret, Salt. Now, the author on the cover is a New Yorker, priest, Canon William Z. Rauscher, but the book was actually ghostwritten by Alan Spraggett, who's written 14, 15 books on the occult. And I met through him. I met Walter Gibson, who was the creator of, remember? Who knows what evil lurks in the heart?
Uh-huh. The shadow.
That wasn't very good. Was that better?
You've been into the wine tonight, Anthony?
No. It was the coffee, actually. Anyway, a little bit of information that not too many know is that he actually was not officially or legally married to Beatrice. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I thought he was.
No, the ceremony was performed by a bogus rabbi who was just part of the Carnegie Group and acting circus that he worked with. So legally, they were living in sin without benefit of clergy, as we used to say.
I didn't know that when I saw Tony Curtis in the Harry Houdini movie.
Yeah, well, he was legally married to his co-star, and that was Janet Leigh, right?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, you know, Houdini's become and remains a very prominent part of the American culture. You know, he's ingrained in our psyche as some kind of a Superman or a super being. And I don't know what more I could say about him, but he was good friends with Arthur Ford, of course. You know, and Arthur Ford was the man who. And Alan Spraggett wrote the book about Alan Ford, and it was called The Man Who Talked with the Dead. And, of course, you know, most people always talk about a lot of these mediums, spiritualists, they always talk about talking to the dead. Well, you know, as you know, anybody can talk to the dead. It's getting the dead to talk back that's the real problem.
Well, with the Houdini, and then I want to get into some of your psychic work that you've done, Anthony, but with Houdini, as a magician, escape artist, everything else, way before his time, he was also obsessed with trying to communicate with his mother. And he went to medium after medium after medium, and he could never find the right one, could he?
Well, the jury is still out in my mind as to whether, you know, we can actually contact the dead, the essence, the energy. I don't believe that we exist as personalities after death. I've mentioned this before. I do believe that a spark of electricity leaves there are three possibilities, and we all search for the answer to this, of course, is there life beyond the grave, and the answer to that is yes and no. So if you're looking to talk to your mother or your uncle after death, I don't believe that's possible because I don't think the personality or the sex or gender of an individual exists after death. The energy, I do believe, exists after. And you could liken it to a computer whose interior works is damaged, and you can't access the information. Well, if somebody has Alzheimer's or has a stroke, it doesn't mean the information is no longer there. It just means that the mechanism is broken. But at death, that little spark leaves the body, I believe, and as it retreats, it shrinks back to its original form like a spark. Or, you know, if you throw a log on a bonfire and they all skittle up into the up into space. And within that spark is contained all of our lives experiences, the voices, the sounds, all of our loved ones. And that little spark, to me, is essentially is the soul, if you want to call it that, or the, I mean, it's either that or there's nothing. Now, then you get into religion, of course, and you've heard all this before. I mean, I absolutely, totally believe that we were visited by
ETs, aliens,
of course. You know, sure. And you remember our good friend Michael, our late Mr. Michael Luckman, and he and I were always in conversation about this. So, and I think, and I do believe, you know, we all look for something to believe in. I believe that we were visited by these beings from another galaxy, another dimension. Or they stepped through, they probably did not have to travel, you know, billions and trillions of light years. They just sort of stepped through a time warp or a wormhole.
Well, they learned how to bend space and time, I think.
Bend space and time. I always likened it to the fans of, remember the fans in the movie Casablanca, how slowly the propellers went around? They could probably mesh through that. If you use the analogy of the blades going around as a dimensional wall and just step through the spaces in the blades into this other dimension. So the more and more I read about this and study about it and think about it, so I really believe they created this out of the primates who were here at the time. So you know, people always ask the question, are you a creationist or are you was it evolutionist? I think both. So we evolved to a certain point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then jump started.
When jump started, we were interfered with because they wanted creatures to do their slave labor and needed them to possess some kind of an intellect, but not too much, you know. And I do believe that that's the way all of this resulted.
At what point in your life did you start realizing you had these psychic abilities?
Well, when I was a kid, again, in the circus, Conklin shows, my father and my mother tried to make a high diver out of me. Well, good luck. got me up about 10 feet on the rungs, and my fingers froze to the ladder. He had to come up and...
Were you petrified?
Petrified. He had to peel them off the steps of the rungs of the ladder. And when I got back down there, I good old terra firma. Boy, did I ever give that ground a good kiss. But, I looked up and I was always, some of your listeners have probably heard this story before, but always I was fascinated by the little old gypsy lady in the canvas candy cane striped tent, I used to hang around with her, and she had the crinkly black hair and the turban and the stars and the crystal ball and the tarot cards and pointy nose and the red rouge, on her cheeks and the lipstick, except when she opened her mouth, she had a Scottish brogue. Probably the old joke was kind of a brogue that should have only been used for walking in. But she's the one who got me started and got me interested in all this kind of thing.
And you got better and better and better. Did you?
Unconsciously, though. It's not something you do consciously. It's like a dog. You do things instinctively, but you don't think about them. And I, as I say, my first experience, that my mother says I jumped out of bed at 5 years of age and ran up and told her I saw Grandpa lying in a box, and scared me, terribly. So 3 days later, of course, he died, and there he was lying in the box.
Lying in a box.
In my mind's eye. And so I spent, things would just come to me either visually as the, I'm sorry, I forgot her name. You had that lady on last night who wrote a book on, Life After Death, Life After Life?
Well, that was an old tape, I think.
Oh, was that? Oh, anyway, so I get these things, as she mentioned, clairvoyantly, or to feel things, and the best one is the solar plexus, you get that gut feeling.
That's right. Hold on, Anthony, we're at the break. I don't want to come back. We'll talk about some of your fulfilled predictions, but I want to get into some of the predictions of the future, and boy, just lay it out for us. We'll be back. Welcome back with the most documented psychic in the world, Anthony Carr. He lives in Toronto, of course. And you, Anthony, were you born out there?
Yes, I was. I was born and then quickly wrapped in my swaddling clothes and whisked off to the circus.
A circus baby.
I don't know if I told you that story before about the swimmer babysitting me when I was the great swimmer there, MGM, Esther Williams.
Really?
Yeah, because she started off with Conklin shows. And, but, you know, Patty Conklin was actually a New Yorker. He came up here and was adopted by Conklin, and his background is German, and he was adopted, and he became the entrepreneur. And we teamed up with American shows and during the war because the circuses and people weren't allowed to crisscross the border, much like today in a sense.
Yeah, well, and now they just do it on their own.
What they would do is circuses would get close to the border, a border town like Buffalo, Niagara Falls, you know, on Canada side, and just they would trade personnel. So we'd go on with American shows and with, you know, travel around the States and vice versa, so to make sure everybody could work. And Esther Williams was started off with Conklin shows, and Patty Conklin and Alfie Phillips, who owned the Water Folly show, took her to Billy Rose, the big aqueduct show in New York. It was a big swim show. Billy Rose was a world renowned entrepreneur. And then from there, of course, an MGM scout discovered her, and the rest is history. So for the first couple of years after she made it big, when we used to go down there, my mother and my dad, when they were busy, and she liked to party, you know, pretty well.
Oh, you have the stories there, Anthony. My gosh.
So she'd sit with me while they did their show or whatever, and the rest of the clowns and all would come back and forth. And George Raft was down there a lot, and he's good friends with my father. So, you know, like that whole thing. When I was making my way down to Hollywood later, it was George Raft who invited me down. He was long past his prime, but he was
He still had a big name.
Yeah, big name. He's a great meet and greet there the Bugsy Siegel built. What was it? Flamingo.
The Flamingo. The first big hotel casino right out there. So how long were you in the circus? I'm convinced you're into something tonight.
Anyway,
how long were you in the circus?
Sorry?
How long were you in the circus?
Until I became, you know, school age, you know, 6, 7, 8, and we had to settle down more.
Was it the Barnum and Bailey Circus or just some circus?
No, that's Conklin shows, which occupies in the summer the grounds where you do your tour up here when you're sojourning.
Yeah.
In the Elizabeth, that whole area is all Conklin shows, the Midway, and then off-season, then we would travel and go on the road and crisscross Canada, the States, and so on and so forth.
All right, let's talk about the past predictions and get into some future ones. People are jumping up and down going, I want to hear predictions, and so be it. 9/11, tell me what you felt, what you saw, what did you say?
9/11. I'm trying to remember who I told that to. Well, the Toronto Star. So one of my, they always come around for predictions for the...
For the year, don't they?
For the year. And so this... Geez, I guess it was 2000. Yeah, it was 2001, and they took me down to the beach here and had me pose with arms, you know, up to heaven like a like ET kind of thing. And I said, what did I say? As a matter of fact, here's Sunday. Yeah, it was in the Sunday 2001. We'll put the fear of God in us.
How far before 9/11? Did you tell them this?
This here says December 31st, 2000.
2000.
2000.
Okay.
So
all right. So, it happened 2001 in September. So it was, 9 months.
9 months. Anyway, what I feel for the world is a great revelation, as if the entire world is going to come to its collective senses. It is as though we realize we have to do something before it's too late. Look up, look all the way up, says Anthony Carr. It's going to come from the sky. It's an imminent, cataclysmic, cosmic event. Advises Carr's making a living, blah, 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 blah. Watch for the signs in the heaven. It will shock the entire world. It'll be like a bolt of lightning from heaven in the form of a UFO or a plane or an astronaut or, you know, so on and so
forth. Or an asteroid, you mean.
Or an asteroid or asteroid. Well, my eyes are not what they used to be. And then other, what did they say here, psychic for the Alexander.
So you were convinced, though.
Well, Randy, that, you know, James Randi, of course, he was a big fan.
Well, he probably thinks you're a quack, right?
Well, if I walked on water, I mean, he'd never give you, you know where they're coming from, because that check for $1 million he carries around in his jacket pocket, his sports, that'd be like crumbled to dust by now.
I think it's dated, isn't it?
That's right. Anthony Carr was nearly bang on in his prediction in the Star article 2001. We'll put the fear of God in us. Look up, look all the way up. And then, so I had people writing in. By the way, did I ever mention to you that Randy came to me for a reading many, many years ago before he made it big?
He came to you for a reading because he wanted to know one, or he wanted to catch you into something?
No. He was genuinely, this is before he debunked Reverend Popoff. And he threw this great author, Alan Sprague, that I was telling you about.
Did you give him a good reading?
Well, I told him he would be rich and famous, and his face would be on all the newspapers and television, and he's a Leo. Of course, Leos are entertainers. And I said, I saw a great medallion around your neck as though you're being awarded something. Well, after he debunked Reverend Popoff and the McCarthy Foundation gave him $247,000 or something, and he was awarded some kind of a medallion, everything. But he came to me and he sent me his handprints and in his letterhead, of course now he's probably forgotten all about it. But if you go to my website on the front page and go to the very bottom of the first page, you'll see that it's there. It's in the his palm prints and his.
I bet he'd never admit it today that he went to anybody for some kind of psychic reading.
But they're there. I mean, it's his hands, and it's his, because, the few times I went into him and shook his hand, I took a quick look at his palms to make sure that they were his. See, people, looking at faces, for me, looking at palms is like looking at somebody's face.
Yeah.
Distinctive, right? So not too many people realize. Anyway.
But when 9/11 occurred. When it occurred, what did you say? Did you say to yourself, oh, my God.
What I got here, I was slightly off with the Empire. I said the Empire State Building explodes from a terrorist bomb. Arab terrorists who wear the red turban and whose emblem is a star and crescent moon are responsible for. Also, the Washington Senate Building. And now, the reason for the... I thought they were going to attack the Empire, because in my mind's eye, when I saw the vision, I was focusing on the Empire State Building, but I didn't realize till after the event that the vision was showing me that once again the Empire State Building would be the tallest building in New York, and I never realized till after the these things are never 100%.
Right.
And what I got here, the Empire State Building explodes from a terrorist bomb, and if you went in, demoralize America, Arab terrorists who were the reason they were responsible. Sabotage of the D.C. Senate building, as well, white dome, black smoke, and fire. Then there was the...
you came close. I think the plane that went down in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but there was a bomb that went off in the white dome building, the Senate building, just prior to that, but they kept it on the hush-hush. I also said that I see raging fires around the White House in Washington. And, of course, in the Paris attack, the Eiffel Tower will be bombed and eventually toppled or gone black or dark. And, of course, looking back at that now, we say, what's this? We feel, visit to Vancouver, where I went to record some predictions, revealed psychic prediction by Anthony Carr, the world we're talking to the Senate. While on plane, psychic suddenly struck by vision of terrible plane crashes over New York City, hundreds killed, well, more than hundreds. August 14, 2001, Anthony Carr visited Vancouver to record his mid-year predictions. On the first of these four tapes, you hear Anthony's prediction of plane crashes over New York City, exactly where I see terrible plane crashes over New York City, hundreds killed. These predictions are witnessed by, and they're signed by different people here.
When these predictions occur, I mean, how did they come to you?
Like a frozen picture or a television show or a flash, with the sound turned off. The Taj Mahal, for instance, when I talked about Taj Mahal being attacked, I see fire, I see death, I see sabotage. Well, of course, it was the Mumbai, and Mumbai was the Taj Mahal Hotel, or the Mumbai Hotel, which is designed exactly like the Taj Mahal.
That's right. No, and you're right.
One newspaper in the two big newspapers in India, one supported me, and the other, you know, it sounded like Randy had visited out there. And, it wasn't the Taj, so, pardon me. These things are not 100. I said, I don't get sound recordings to go with these. Although my grandmother, who missed the Titanic by 4 hours, she was clairaudient. She used to hear the universe would elicit voices and sounds. And, of course, that's one of my theories about schizophrenia, too. I've always believed that schizophrenia is really a matter of people whose storage battery, for want of a better word, are firing in all those synapses so powerfully. They're picking up images and voices and sounds from people who've gone on. Don't forget, the universe records everything. It makes a record of everything. When I did that reading for Richard Burton many years ago, and I predicted that he had to be careful in a speedboat that is going to crash on against rocks in a cliff with a young woman with long red hair, and he looked up at his agent who was standing behind me, and he asked him, he said, did he read the script? Did you show him? No. Anyway, the ending had called for the boat to be crashed on rocks with this young girl who actually was his daughter in real life. Based on that, he changed the end of the script, and he was shooting that film with it's called Circle of Two at the time. Who was married? She was married to that tennis bad boy. What was his name? The actor, Ryan. Do you remember Ryan O'Neill? I guess his daughter.
John McEnroe.
John McEnroe.
Yeah.
That's it.
See, I'm psychic.
Yes. Like, listen. You talk on your show. I've heard people talk about ghosts and spirits and. I think this tape I heard last night about animals and animal spirits,
yeah.
It only stands to reason that all living things, including the quadrupeds, us, we are controlled by the prana, the life force, the electricity, for want of a better word, in the universe, and that it's suffused through all and everything. Of course, the natives believe that and live by that 100%. So again, the spark that we... People have a tendency to think that humans are separate from the universe, and we're as much a part of it as the rest of it. It's the great cycle of life. Everything that keeps everything living and breathing and growing, we're part and parcel of. So that was very interesting. I've heard some of your guests talk about, God is love and a loving spirit. You cannot have a loving, peaceful spirit without when I say spirit, I'm talking about the power of the universe, without the negative, angry, violent side as well, the yin and yang, or else there would be no universe, nothing would exist.
Well, isn't that where the devil comes in?
Well, the devil, when something negative happens, if you follow astrology as I do, then, when planets make difficult aspects and grand squares and oppositions in the world as we have now with floods and Neptune and in its own sign of Pisces now, and of course humans have a tendency to want to anthropomorphize nature, which is to attribute human characters to the forces of nature, because we need to believe that there's a kind and loving Moses-like deity up there taking care of each other. Well, I have to say it. To me, it's silly, because that's like believing in Santa Claus. In fact, I always say, when my mother told me there was no Santa Claus, I knew there was no God of that kind. That said, I too am looking for something to believe in, and I believe in these star travelers. And for sure, if there's anything to resurrection and an afterlife, would be the effect of cloning and raising the dead from your very own DNA, which we're sort of experimenting with here now. And, the book of Sodom and Gomorrah, when Abraham wrestled with so-called lord all night long and was victorious over him. And he stretched out his arms and said, and there was all these dead bones from, I guess, soldiers fighting over, do you believe these dead bones can rise again? And he said, well, you know, Lord, right? And he put out his hand, and each bone went by its hip bone, and each bone, well, remember the song, the hymn? The hip bone's connected to the leg bone, right? That's where that came from. And then sinews and muscle covered these bones, but they stood as zombies or as one dead until the Lord breathed life into them. Now, you must be talking about cloning.
Like that, sure.
Something's missing there. When you talk about the Ark of the Covenant, you know, if you touched it, you died and so on. Well, that's because, well, in the University of Utah or Oregon, I read years ago, they built that Ark of the Covenant based on the prescriptions.
The biblical specs, right?
And then it was such a powerful storage battery, they say the sparks were flying off of it. They had to dismantle it. It was setting fire to everything, the curtains, the blinds, and everything else. So when they moved that into the city of David after they had built the great temple, and the guy, of course, with the oxen who touched it because it was going to fall off the cart, and he suddenly died, and the Bible says because God's anger was...
He got electrocuted.
He got electrocuted, exactly. So, you know, when David touched it, it just happened to be turned off, and as I say, I think the royal crown, the deities... of the deities, I think they ultimately were the antenna through which David or the kings talked to God through the magic blocks and to whatever, the mothership and so on and so forth. So, I mean, we all need, so the thing is, either we're dead, and of all of your guests I've heard over the years with all, you know, due respect, you never, it's always, we go on to the shiny light and we do that, or we go here, we go, but...
Or we come back from
it. That's right. And why would we come back here? This is a speck of dust in a fathomless universe, in parallel universe. The electrical energy can go anywhere and into anything. You know, not necessarily and probably not back into this little...
I don't know. I'd come back, Anthony. I think I'm not done having fun here.
Well, yeah, but you're thinking in terms of personality, ego, a man, you know, I mean, some of these, I quite often I've asked people, I said, well, okay, let's say when you pass on, I said, you're in heaven, do you see yourself as a man or a woman? Oh, I'm a woman or a man? Well, no, because the genitalia is only for purposes of breeding, you know, same as dogs, cats, and all the rest of it. In the spirit world, there'd be no such need for these things. And again, there would be no, I think... When, the only word I've never heard anybody mention of all of these guests who've been on Coast to Coast, and thank heaven, and I use that, you know, it's a figure of speech, thank heaven that we do have a sounding board through you in the show. It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity.
Hold on, Anthony. We're going to take this break, but we're going to come back. I want to talk about some predictions for the future, and we'll take phone calls. And I understand you may do some real quick personal ones with people who call in. We'll be back.